Good evening. The canto that I'm going to read tonight is the second canto. And it's a good illustration of the theory, which is that the cantos of Savitri are constructed on a principle of Vedic sacrifice. Each canto goes through the movements of the sacrifice, the invocation of the Supreme in some form, the total self-giving and surrender, which usually also includes a statement of that which is being surrendered or rejected. The silence, and then the descent, and a statement of affirmation of the presence that responds to the sacrifice. So every canto is structured that way. And in that sense, Savitri ceases to be a long poem, and it becomes a collection of mantras. Each one is basically the same as all the others. And this is true in the Rig Veda. With minor variations, you can read 10, 15, 20 Vedic hymns that all say basically the same thing. But there's a little slight variation in imagery or order or something like that. The reason why it works the way it works, the reason why it's necessary to the yoga of, hello Charles, transformation, is because that structure is the structure of the yoga of transformation. So when did you arrive in Oroville? Yeah, welcome. We are at the end of this cycle, basically. And so, anyway, this canto that I'm going to read tonight is a good illustration of that, but it's not something that you are cognizant of. It's an underlying structure. You may become cognizant of it in a way, but it's extremely subtle. So tonight, Savitri, just Savitri, the issue. And then next week will be the last meeting, and I will pick a canto to read next week from book two. We have done the what I've called the Aswapati Yoga cycle, which is the cantos 3, 4, and 5 of book one, and the 4 cantos of book 3. But then we all know that Sri Aurobindo went back and wrote the whole of book 2 over quite a long period of time after having created that basic structure. And book 2 is the full exfoliation, exploration of all the planes. All the planes. But as we saw at one point, to go from from the end of book two to book three is the same as going from the end of book one to book three. He's still in the same place, dwelling upon the same type of transition. And at the end of book three, there is the invocation to the mother who descends in him to send to earth a form of herself, to make a radical difference. Having seen that the transformation was inevitable, he still insists at the end of his yoga, in terms of full realization and the complete descent of the supramental force in him, and the vision of the inevitability of the transformation, even then he insists that it is not enough, that she, who is now surrendered to him in his surrender to her, must act definitively to hasten the advent. Then we've come back to the first two cantos of book one, which are the introduction to Savitri, who is that answer. And then one can go from there to the yoga of Savitri, which is basically from book seven on. And one sees the recapitulation in book seven of everything that Aswapati has done in the seven books that we've read. But having said all of that, the truth is in the hearing. Nowhere else. You can't read the truth of Savitri, and you can't think the truth of Savitri. You can only hear the truth of Savitri. And that is the secret of mantra. And that is why Sri Aurobindo went to the trouble during all of those years of writing this book. He doesn't say anything substantially different than he has said elsewhere, but he says it differently. And this difference makes all the difference. Because this is potentially a transmission of an experience of all of that about which he has spoken elsewhere. We can understand what he's talking about sometimes. But that's different from having even a subtle mental perception of what he's talking about. And I would just add that the reason why the truth is in the hearing is because the mantric transmission is based on the principle of rhythm. And Sri Aurobindo has explained this at length in the future poetry. And so there comes, in the process of reading Savitri, there comes a point where the structure of Savitri, her body, her luminous body of energy and force, comes into being on that rhythm. What is the Sanskrit term, Vladimir, for that? Chandas? Is it? And so we try to allow Savitri to... Savitri is the word. He says this many times in the book. She is the word. She is the silence. And so we simply try to allow that presence to form its rhythmic being. A while, withdrawn in secret fields of thought, her mind moved in a many-imaged past that lived again and saw its end approach. Dying, it lived imperishably in her. Transient and vanishing from transient eyes, invisible, a fateful ghost of self. It bore the future on its phantom breast. Along the fleeting events, far backward trail, regressed the stream of the insistent hours. And on the bank of the mysterious flood, peopled with well-loved forms, now seen no more, and the subtle images of things that were. Her witness spirit stood, reviewing time. All that she once had hoped and dreamed and been flew past her eagle-winged through memory's skies. As if in a many-hued, flaming inner dawn, her life's broad highways and its sweet bypaths lay mapped to her sun-clear recording view. From the bright country of her childhood's days and the blue mountains of her soaring youth and the paradise groves and peacock wings of love, to joy clutched under the silent shadow of doom. In a last turn, where heaven raced with hell. Twelve passionate months led in a day of fate. An absolute supernatural darkness falls on man sometimes when he draws near to God. an hour arrives when fail all nature's means. Forced out from the protecting ignorance and flung back on his naked primal need, he at length must cast from him his surface soul and be the ungarbed entity within. That hour had fallen now on Savitri, a point she had reached where life must be in vain, or in her unborn element awake. Her will must cancel her body's destiny. For only the unborn spirit's timeless power can lift the yoke imposed by birth in time. Only the self that builds this figure of self can raise the fixed interminable line that joins these changing names, these numberless lives, these new oblivious personalities, and keeps still lurking in our conscious acts the trail of old forgotten thoughts and deeds. Disown the legacy of our buried selves, the burdensome heirship to our vanished forms, accepted blindly by the body and soul. An episode in an unremembered tale. Its beginning lost, its motive and plot concealed. A once living story has prepared and made our present fate. Child of past energies. The fixity of the cosmic sequences, fastened with hidden, inevitable links. She must disrupt, dislodge by her soul's force, her past, a block on the immortal's road. Make a raised ground and shape anew her fate. A colloquy of the original gods meeting upon the borders of the unknown, her soul's debate with embodied nothingness must be wrestled out on a dangerous, dim background. Her being must confront its formless cause. Against the universe, weigh its single self. On the bare peak, where self is alone with naught, and life has no sense, and love no place to stand. She must plead her case upon extinction's verge. In the world's death cave, uphold life's helpless claim and vindicate her right to be and love. Altered must be nature's harsh economy. Acquittance she must win from her past's bond. An old account of suffering exhaust. Strike out from time the soul's long compound debt and the heavy servitudes of the karmic gods, the slow revenge of unforgiving law, and the deep need of universal pain and hard sacrifice and tragic consequence. Out of a timeless barrier she must break, penetrate with her thinking depths the void's monstrous hush, look into the lonely eyes of immortal death, and with her nude spirit measure the infinite's night. The great and dolorous moment now was close. A mailed battalion marching to its doom, the last long days went by with heavy tramp. Long, but too soon to pass. Too near the end. Alone amid the many faces loved, aware among unknowing happy hearts, her armored spirit kept watch upon the hours, listening for a foreseen, tremendous step. In the closed beauty of the inhuman wilds, a combatant in silent, dreadful lists. The world unknowing, For the world she stood. No helper had she save the strength within. There was no witness of terrestrial eyes. The gods above and nature, soul below, were the spectators of that mighty strife. Around her were the austere sky-pointing hills and the green, murmurous, broad, deep-thoughted woods muttered incessantly their muffled spell. A dense, magnificent, colored, self-wrapped life, draped in the leaves' vivid emerald monotone and set with checkered sunbeams and blithe flowers, immured her destiny's secluded scene. There had she grown to the stature of her spirit. The genius of titanic silences, steeping her soul in its wide loneliness, had shown to her herself's bare reality and mated her with her environment. Its solitude greatened her human hours with a background of the eternal and unique. A force of spare, direct necessity reduced the heavy framework of man's days and his overburdening mass of outward needs to a first thin strip of simple animal wants. And the mighty wildness of the primitive earth and the brooding multitude of patient trees and the musing sapphire leisure of the sky, and the solemn weight of the slowly passing months had left in her deep room for thought and God. There was her drama's radiant prologue lived. A spot for the eternal's tread on earth. Set in the cloistral yearning of the woods and watched by the aspiration of the peaks, appeared through an aureate opening in time where stillness, listening, felt the unspoken word. And the hours forgot to pass towards grief and change. Here, with the suddenness divine advents have, repeating the marvel of the first descent, changing to rapture the dull earthly round. Love came to her, hiding the shadow, death. Well might he find in her his perfect shrine. Since first the earth being's heavenward growth began, through all the long ordeal of the race, never a rarer creature bore his shaft. That burning test of the Godhead in our parts. A lightning from the heights on our abyss. All in her pointed to a nobler kind. Near to earth's wideness, intimate with heaven, exalted and swift, her young, large-visioned spirit voyaging through worlds of splendor and of calm overflew the ways of thought to unborn things. Ardent was her self-poised, unstumbling will. Her mind, a sea of white sincerity, passionate in flow, had not one turbid wave. As in a mystic and dynamic dance, a priestess of immaculate ecstasies, inspired and ruled from truth's revealing vault, moves in some prophet cavern of the gods, a heart of silence in the hands of joy, inhabited with rich creative beats, a body like a parable of dawn that seemed a niche for veiled divinity. Or golden temple door to things beyond. Her mind, a sea of white sincerity, passionate in flow, had not one turbid wave. As in a mystic and dynamic dance, a priestess of immaculate ecstasies, inspired and ruled from truth's revealing vault, moves in some prophet cavern of the gods, a heart of silence in the hands of joy, inhabited with rich creative beats, a body like a parable of dawn that seemed a niche for veiled divinity, or golden temple door to things beyond. Immortal rhythms swayed in her time-born steps. Her look, her smile, awoke celestial sense, even in earth stuff, and their intense delight poured a supernal beauty on men's lives. A wide self-giving was her native act. A magnanimity as of sea or sky, enveloped with its greatness all that came and gave a sense as of a greatened world. Her kindly care was a sweet, temperate sun. Her high passion, a blue heaven's equipoise. As might a soul fly like a hunted bird, escaping with tired wings from a world of storms and a quiet reach like a remembered breast. In a haven of safety and splendid soft repose, one could drink life back in streams of honey fire, recover the lost habit of happiness, feel her bright nature's glorious ambience, and preen joy in her warmth and colors rule. A deep of compassion, a hushed sanctuary. Her inward help unbarred a gate in heaven. Love in her was wider than the universe. The whole world could take refuge in her single heart. The great unsatisfied Godhead here could dwell, vacant of the dwarf self's imprisoned air, her mood could harbor his sublimer breath. Her mood could harbor his sublimer breath, spiritual, that can make all things divine. For even her gulfs were secrecies of light. At once she was the stillness and the word. A continent of self-diffusing peace. An ocean of untrembling virgin fire. The strength, the silence of the gods were hers. In her he found a vastness like his own. His high, warm, subtle ether he refound and moved in her as in his natural home. In her he met his own eternity. Till then, no mournful line had barred this ray. On the frail breast of this precarious earth, since her orb's sight in its breath-fastened house, opening in sympathy with happier stars where life is not exposed to sorrowful change. Remembered beauty, death-claimed lids ignore, and wondered at this world of fragile forms, carried on canvas strips of shimmering time. The impunity of unborn mites was hers. On the frail breast of this precarious earth, since her orb sight in its breath-fastened house, opening in sympathy with happier stars where life is not exposed to sorrowful change, remembered beauty, death-claimed lids ignore, and wondered at this world of fragile forms, carried on canvas strips of shimmering time. The impunity of unborn mites was hers. Although she leaned to bear the human load, her walk kept still the measures of the gods. Earth's breath had failed to stain that brilliant glass. Unsmeared with the dust of our mortal atmosphere, it still reflected heaven's spiritual joy. Almost they saw, who lived within her light, her playmate in the sempiternal spheres, descended from its unattainable realms in her attracting advent's luminous wake. The white fire dragon bird of endless bliss, drifting with burning wings above her days. Heaven's tranquil shield guarded the missioned child. A glowing orbit was her early term. Years like gold raiment of the gods that pass. Her youth sat throned in calm felicity. But joy cannot endure until the end. There is a darkness in terrestrial things that will not suffer long too glad a note. On her too closed the inescapable hand, the armed immortal bore the snare of time. One dealt with her who meets the burdened great, a signer of the ordeal and the path, who chooses in this holocaust of the soul death, fall, and sorrow as the spirit's goads. The dubious Godhead, with his torch of pain, lit up the chasm of the unfinished world and called her to fill with her vast self the abyss. August and pitiless, in his calm outlook, heightening the Eternal's dreadful strategy, He measured the difficulty with the might and dug more deep the gulf that all must cross. Assailing her divinest elements, he made her heart kin to the striving human heart and forced her strength to its appointed road. For this, she had accepted mortal breath. To wrestle with the shadow she had come and must confront the riddle of man's birth and life's brief struggle in dumb matter's night. For this she had accepted mortal breath, to wrestle with the shadow she had come, and must confront the riddle of man's birth and life's brief struggle in dumb matter's night. Whether to bear with ignorance and death, or hew the ways of immortality, to win or lose the godlike game for man, was her soul's issue, thrown with destiny's dice. But not to submit and suffer was she born. Here was no fabric of terrestrial make, fit for a day's use by busy, careless powers. An image fluttering on the screen of fate, half animated for a passing show, or a castaway on the ocean of desire, flung to the eddies in a ruthless sport, and tossed along the gulfs of circumstance, a creature born to bend beneath the yoke. A chattel and a plaything of time's lords, or one more pawn who comes destined to be pushed one slow move forward on a measureless board in the chess play of the earth's soul with doom. Such is the human figure drawn by time. A conscious frame was here, a self-born force. In this enigma of the dusk of God, this slow and strange, uneasy compromise of limiting nature with a limitless soul, where all must move between an ordered chance and an uncaring, blind necessity. Too high, the fire spiritual dare not blaze. If once it met the intense original flame, an answering touch might shatter all measures made, and earth sink down with the weight of the infinite. A jail is this immense material world. Across each road stands armed a stone-eyed law. At every gate, the huge dim sentinels pace. A gray tribunal of the ignorance, an inquisition of the priests of night, in judgment sit on the adventurer's soul. And the dual tables and the karmic norm restrain the Titan in us and the God. Pain with its lash, joy with its silver bribe, guard the wheel's circling immobility. A bond is put on the high-climbing mind, a seal on the too large, wide-open heart. Death stays the journeying discoverer life. Thus is the throne of the inconscient safe, while the tardy coilings of the aeons pass, and the animal browses in the sacred fence, and the gold hawk can cross the skies no more. But one stood up and lit the limitless flame. Arraigned by the dark power that hates all bliss, in the dire court where life must pay for joy, sentenced by the mechanic justicer to the afflicting penalty of man's hopes. Her head she bowed not to the stark decree, bearing her helpless heart to destiny's stroke. So bows and must the mind-born will in man, obedient to the statutes fixed of old, admitting without appeal the nether gods. In her the superhuman cast its seed, inapt to fold its mighty wings of dream, her spirit refused to hug the common soil, or, finding all life's golden meanings robbed, compound with earth, struck from the starry list, or quench with black despair the God-given light. Accustomed to the eternal and the true, her being, conscious of its divine founts, asked not from mortal frailty pain's relief. Patched not with failure, bargain, or compromise. A work she had to do, a word to speak. Writing the unfinished story of her soul in thoughts and actions graved in nature's book, she accepted not to close the luminous page, cancel her commerce with eternity, or set a signature of weak assent to the brute balance of the world's exchange. A force in her that toil since earth was made, accomplishing in life the great world plan, pursuing after death immortal aims, repugned to admit frustration's barren role, forfeit the meaning of her birth in time, obey the government of the casual fact, or yield her high destiny up to passing chance. In her own self, she found her high recourse. She matched with the iron law her sovereign right. Her single will opposed the cosmic rule. To stay the wheels of doom, this greatness rose. At the unseen's knock, upon her hidden gates, her strength made greater by the lightning's touch, awoke from slumber in her heart's recess. At the unseen's knock, upon her hidden gates, her strength made greater by the lightning's touch, awoke from slumber in her heart's recess. It bore the stroke of that which kills and saves. Across the awful march no eye can see, barring its dreadful route, no will can change. She faced the engines of the universe. A heart stood in the way of the driving wheels. Its giant workings paused in front of a mind. Its stark conventions met the flame of a soul. A magic leverage suddenly is caught that moves the veiled ineffable's timeless will. A prayer, a master act, a king idea can link man's strength to a transcendent force. Then miracle is made the common rule. One mighty deed can change the course of things. A lonely thought becomes omnipotent. All now seems nature's massed machinery. An endless servitude to material rule, and long determination's rigid chain. Her firm and changeless habits, aping law. Her empire of unconscious, deft device. Annul the claim of man's free human will. He too is a machine amid machines. A piston brain pumps out the shapes of thought. A beating heart cuts out emotion's modes. An insentient energy fabricates a soul. Or the figure of the world reveals the signs of a tied chance, repeating her old steps in circles around matter's binding posts, a random series of inept events to which reason lends elusive sense is here. Or the empiric life's instinctive search. Or a vast, ignorant mind's colossal work. But wisdom comes, and vision grows within. Then nature's instrument crowns himself her king. He feels his witnessing self and conscious power. His soul steps back and sees the light supreme. A Godhead stands behind the brute machine. This truth broke in a triumph of fire. A victory was won for God in man. The deity revealed its hidden face. The great world mother now in her arose. A living choice reversed fate's cold, dead turn, affirmed the spirit's tread on circumstance, pressed back the senseless, dire, revolving wheel, and stopped the mute march of necessity. A flaming warrior from the eternal peaks, empowered to force the door denied and closed, smote from death's visage its dumb absolute and burst the bounds of consciousness and time.
I'd like to read a brief passage from the agenda. 1970. A great passivity is needed for the force to stream through rapidly and reach the body. Every time there is a need to work on one part of the body or another, it always begins with a state of absolute passivity, which is like a perfection of inertia. It is the perfection of that which is imperfect in inertia. Something that has no activity of itself. It is a state very difficult to achieve for those with a great mental development. And it is all the more difficult since the body has striven all its life precisely to be receptive and obedient to the mental influence. But that's what has to be done. That's what has to be undone. How to say this? The development through the mind's agency implies a constant overall state of awakening, even materially. In order to receive the supreme force, on the contrary, an absolutely conscious immobility, the immobility of sleep, but absolutely conscious, is required. The body can feel the difference. It feels the difference to a point where at night I am in that state for hours. But if after some time I fall into ordinary sleep, my body wakes up in frightful anguish. In other words, the body has succeeded in having at the same time aspiration and immobility, complete immobility, and intense aspiration. And it's only when immobility is alone without aspiration that the body is overcome with anguish and wakes up immediately. Yes, the body feels that the highest vibration, the vibration of the true consciousness, is so intense that it is equivalent to the immobility of inertia. That intensity is so great that to us, it is equivalent to inertia. I often thought it must be the supramental vibration, the true divine vibration. It made me understand why the creation began with inertia. The goal is to rediscover that state after having gone through all the states of consciousness. To us, the whole process appears as a complete waste. But when there's a purpose behind it, it's no longer a waste. One could almost say that the creation began with a state of unconscious perfection and must reach a state of conscious perfection with imperfection in between. I have the feeling of being on the verge of total comprehension. But it isn't at all mental comprehension. It is lived comprehension. The mind cannot experience that. It feels as if the body alone, when it is receptive and open and at least partially transformed, were capable of understanding the creation. In each and every canto, in each and every section, prior to the affirmation of a major descent and change, there is a statement of complete immobility. That is the pattern throughout Savitri. But immobility, Sri Aurobindo has so many words for it. The stillness. The void. The word. In the silence of the heart, that word. Somehow Sri Aurobindo has contrived to bring a balance between the stillness and the force in the rhythm of Savitri.